Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there behind the counter.
No mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison. How's it going?
Oh, good, good, thanks. Good to be here. We've just been listening to a really nice engine, haven't we?
We have. Yes. Bit of a treat in the morning.
Very impressive. So now, look, on today's show, we're going to talk about what we've been reading and what's on our to-be-read list, and then we've got a hot tip to share. Yeah,
maybe even two. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, yes. Actually, that's true, isn't it? Now, look, I've been reading about human relationships in the past couple of weeks. Not surprising, since you know how much I love human drama. I should say in books, that is, not in real life.
And in Shorty, right?
Oh, and Shortland Street, yes, which is real.
Of course, I forgot.
In my life. Hey, so I've just finished this really interesting Australian novel, and it's called Polly by a writer called Paul Delgano. Now, it's available in hard copy in the libraries at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised to see this on one of our ebook platforms before too long. Now, Polly is spelt with one L, and that will give you a bit of a clue about the content. Having said content, there's no particular content warning required. So my measure is, I think my mum could read it, okay.
Good for mums.
Yeah, good for mums. Perhaps, you know. So, just published very recently, and it's Paul Delgano's debut novel, and it's set in present-day Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has published non-fiction earlier, but this is his first novel.
Okay.
So the book, it follows a married millennial couple, a man and a woman called Chris and Sarah, and they open up their relationship to polyamory, and the story is told from the man's point of view. So the narrator, Chris, he's an introverted people pleaser who works in a library.
Oh, right.
As you do.
Never met any of those in libraries.
No, that's right. And he loves music and reading. His self-esteem's pretty poor. But he really wants to be a good father and husband. And he's grieving the recent loss of his mother. Now, his wife, Sarah, used to be a professional dancer, and she loves poetry. She's very kind and compassionate, but she's a little bit impractical. She's sort of not that great in a crisis. She'll tend to quote poetry by Rumi or something instead of actually doing something. And she works in alternative medicine. She loves her two young children, but she sort of feels worn down by the years of domestic drudgery that she has experienced. And she's also grieving the death of her long-term extramarital love interest, who was a Kiwi called Nico.
Mm.
And she remembers him as being some sort of love god, which he probably was, I'm sure. And I don't think that's helped her husband's self-esteem. So they've been together 15 years. Things are a bit dull, and there's no spark in the relationship. So they decide to embark on polyamory, and that is, they introduce other love interests into their relationship. So the cover of the book is interesting. It shows an open box of matches, which sort of suggested to me at first that either the polyamory experiment would add a bit of spark or vigour to the relationship, or else that the whole thing was going to go up in a ball of flames and become a sort of great big tire fire.
I can't wait to find out what it is.
Yes, I won't spoil the plot, but it's pretty compelling. There's some hilarious sort of awkward missteps and miscalculations. Some of it's quite poignant too. And the character, Chris, he's a bit of a millennial male Bridget Jones in some respects. But, you know, and I enjoyed the book to some extent, but overall it just didn't really move me. And I was just going to read this passage that where narrator Chris is questioning his decision-making because he's just spent the night with a young love interest of his. And he says, was it all about mortality? Was I reaching back through time, trying to cheat my place on the conveyor belt of doom by clinging on to a younger woman? Nah, I just like being with her, how she made me feel. So like that passage, to me, that did absolutely nothing for me.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a young Nick Hornby-ish.
Yeah, actually, perhaps more Nick Hornby than Bridget Jones, perhaps, yeah. But so it's quite funny, it's quite sad, and it, you know, it certainly gives you an insight into the diversity of postmodern relationships, but I just, I don't know.
Could have been better for you.
Yeah, it just didn't really do it for me.
Oh, well, you might like to try one that I've been reading. Interestingly, I've also been reading a sort of a thruply situation book. This one is called Luster by Raven Leilani. It was published last year, and you find it in the adult fiction collection in all the formats pretty much. It's another debut novel from an American author. I really can't get enough of these at the moment. So it's just absolutely pack my requests queue. Now, Edie is a black woman in her 20s, and she's living in New York City. She's got no family, and she's got quite a sad past. She's really doing the best that she can right now, but it's not quite passing muster. She's working in a really thankless job in publishing that she's not really interested in, and it only just covers the bill. She's actually an aspiring artist, but she's just not able to do it right now. She's quite lonely and depressed, but still quite horny, and she's completely over the absolutely superhuman effort that's involved in trying to be the very best black girl in the office. And, you know, according to the structure of what's going on in her office, there can be only one, and somebody else is doing it better than her. Yeah, she's given up the fight with that one. When we first meet Edie, she's in a relationship. It is online, and it's during work time with her polar opposite. Eric's a white man in his late 40s. He's got a successful career. His wife, Rebecca, has written the rules for an open marriage for him. So he's playing by the rules, but she's got huge oversight over what's going on in that. Now, it turns out that Edie, as well as sort of having online sex with Eric during work time, she's also been having quickies in the workplace with various workmates, and this gets discovered and she gets fired. None of the partners, I should point out, any of the other partners gets fired.
She does.
Yeah. So she's lost her money, she's kicked out of her apartment, and she ends up living by this kind of unspoken arrangement in Eric's big house in the suburbs with his wife and their adopted teenage daughter, Akila, who is a really savvy, sarcastic young woman, but she's really struggling. She's the only black kid in her all-white neighbourhood. So the idea seems to be that Edie moving in is going to fix like a multitude of problems all at once. You can see that this might not work.
Should I get out the box of matches as well? Yeah.
Now, lots of the power dynamics in play in this book, so race, privilege, gender and capitalism, age as well is a big factor because Edie's like 20 years younger than her lover and only maybe 8 years older than their adopted daughter. That it all becomes really hothoused by this kind of weird marriage of convenience that ends up going on there. She's really searching for stability. She wants support and time to be able to paint and build her artistic career up, and she's never had that before. And she wants a relationship and a family on her own terms, but instead she's getting this kind of borrowed, weird version where she has to jump through all these crazy hoops, you know, emotional and mental hoops and physical hoops as well, and navigate really murky waters to get anywhere close to what she actually wants. And she's never really going to make it in the way that it's working out. Leilani's a really, really talented writer. She's got very blunt, beautiful language, and she's got this really unfiltered spotlight shining on Edie's inner thoughts. So you get all the messiness that's going on in Edie's head. Edie's one of those characters that, you know, we see a lot of now. You know, she's a messy, complicated modern woman who, you know, she's not playing by the rules that everyone wants for her. There's lots of dark humour in the book, and it really shows us the exhausting reality of what Edie's sort of untethered life is like. She's got a lot of pain going on, but she's also got heaps of raw potential. She's a very smart young person, but she's got no net and in a really harsh society. So, yeah, it puts everything into stark contrast, these different lives working with each other. So I found this a really addictive read. And I reckon that if you enjoyed Queenie by Candace Cardi-Williams or Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid, then you would want to get on to Luster by Raven Leilani.
Sounds amazing. I'm going to have to put my name on the request
really
list for
good.
That one.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Can't wait. Well, look, sort of on a similar theme, similar but different, the other book I've been reading, which is also about the diversity and complexity of modern life, modern relationships, is called Exquisite Cadavers. It's a great title, isn't it? By Mina Kandasamy. Now, it was published 2019, and it's in all the formats too, the ebook and hard copy. So now this is really interesting. She's an interesting writer. So Mina Kandasamy, she's a poet, fiction writer, translator, and she's an activist actually. She was born in Chennai in India, but lives in London now. It's quite an unusual book, but you know me, these sort of things are right up my alley. Actually, it's very short. It's only like 100 pages, but it's very dense, it's complex and brave, and it leaves you wanting more, like any good novel or novella should. Now, by the way, if you're wondering about the title of the book, Exquisite Cadavers, it's a nod to that old parlour game where I think we've called it something different in New Zealand, but we're a group of people construct a story by each adding a sentence at the end of the previous one, but you don't really get to see all the other sentences. And then when they read it out at the end, the story's gone all sort of cattywampus, if that's a word. And Exquisite Cadavers is actually the surrealist art version of that game.
Interesting.
Where you put a picture or a photo together using little bits, and then what comes out at the end is really unusual. So the book anyway was written as a response to the response to her earlier work of autofiction, which was called When I Hit You, and which was an account of an abusive marriage. Now the earlier book was constructed as a novel, a work of autofiction. However, the reviewers insisted on describing it as a memoir, and so the author felt enraged that she wasn't allowed the autonomy of deciding the genre that her own first novel belonged to.
Fascinating, yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting how she's had this reaction, and she firmly believes, and I'm sure she's right, that this happened not only because she's a woman, but because she's a woman of colour, and that it was the white reviewers that determined
and imposed that.
Yes, imposed their lens on her own work.
Interesting.
So she's written this book, Exquisite Cadavers. It's somewhat experimental, but she's very clear to state that the main text of the book has nothing to do with her own life. But on each page, she's written extensively about herself and her life, but they're in the margins of each page.
Oh.
It's kind of fascinating. And I'm sure she's trying to tell us that many people and people of colour, immigrant communities, live in the margins of society. I think that's what she's sort of trying to say.
Interesting, yeah.
So the main text is a story about a young couple in London called Maya and Karim, and she makes it clear that their lives are not the same as hers. And they're just navigating life and modern or postmodern life and the complexity of relationships. He's from Tunisia, and she's a mixed race British. The writer says, I make Maya, the mixed race British woman, I make her very relatable to British readers. I steal a little bit of every English woman I see to build the composite. And so Maya is Amy, Sarah, Claire, Naomi, Jill, Lucy, Alison, and God, yes, Kate, of course.
So that's what authors need to do to sell the book.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it?
For relatability.
Yeah, so there's so much packed into the 100 pages, not just the two stories, but opinions about immigration, sexual violence, Me Too, film criticism, the history, the damage handed down in families.
Mm.
It's so insightful and quite humorous in a way. She's really good on difficult relationships and also liberal identity politics, because Karim, the partner in the book, he's a film studies undergrad.
Okay.
He's on a scholarship and he's looking for a subject for his first film, but everything he suggests is rejected by his university. And so they say, oh, we want a project that embraces and interrogates your identity as motivation, as an art statement, as part of our institutional commitment and mission to include a whole host of diverse voices.
But they won't take his proposal.
Yeah. And what he's hearing is what they don't say, and it's, you're here, you're in London, we're paying for this, we expect you to listen to us.
Mm.
You know, there's, it's really, really interesting and transactional and scary, and it's so good.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah. I really, really liked it. It's concise and punchy. I could say more about it, but I'd highly, highly recommend it. Really loved it.
Sounds wonderful, yeah. Did you think that she's really nailed what she set out to?
Yes, I think she has. Now, some reviewers have said that she's a little bit heavy-handed in what she's trying to say, but just things like Karim's experience of, he's got the supposed freedom to make art, but he realises that his freedom, it's utterly sort of transactional. It's exactly the same as the 20 hours a week that he spends working in a Turkish restaurant.
Yeah,
it's and all the microaggressions that they both experience.
It's quite interesting because that the Luster by Raven Leilani also looks at that, because in the book, Edie's also an artist, and and really the only way that she can find time to work on her art is to live in this house in this compromised position with these very successful couple.
Yes, and that, I'm sure they put pressure on her too, and probably insinuate, you're in our house, we're paying for this.
Absolutely, you, there's all these rules around it, yeah, and caveats around it.
Mm. And even sometimes they're not spoken overtly these days, because that would be
That's wrong.
In air quotes, but we make it pretty clear, don't we, that you'll do what we...
That's right.
Say you'll, you know, do. Yeah.
Oh, fascinating. I've got to put this one on my list. It sounds really, really good.
Yeah, I really loved it. And it grabbed me more than Polly did, to be really honest.
Yeah, and just in 100 pages too.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I've been looking at human relationships over a longer span with my next read. And this is a non-fiction read called Humankind, A Hopeful History by Rutger Bregman. Bergman? I've got it written down twice here. It's either Bregman or Bergman, everybody.
Oh, yes, I see.
Check it for yourself. Have fun with that. it's available in hard copy and an e-book. Now, Rutger, I'm going to call him Rutger now, for our first name basis. He is a Dutch author and historian. And the premise for this book is that despite the doom and gloom that we are always seeing on our news cycles, that humans are essentially and innately altruistic people who want to do the right by each other, even and perhaps especially in times of crisis. So this is the sort of thing I really needed to read, to be honest, after the last few years.
We all need it, don't we?
That's right. So he has sifted through hundreds of sociology papers to find many stories and statistics to back up this claim. And he's included, he's gone right back to sort of anthropological studies, and he's looked to see, he's decided that humankind's true superpower and the reason that we're at the top of the heap when it comes to the food chain and the chain of life is that we were friendly enough to live together in groups and work together for the greater good. So it's sort of survival of the most convivial.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So he reckons that it all started, you know, that the fall of Eden really was when we started settling and getting into agriculture and possessing land, and yeah, so he was sort of talking about nomadic culture versus settled culture.
Fascinating.
Yeah, pretty interesting. He's really uncovered some fascinating research. Just as one little example, did you know that 80% of US soldiers never actually use their weapons when they're in combat? This is during World War II. They were completely disinclined to kill despite being under fire themselves, and they would, rather than run away and hide, they would do other things that might put them in more danger rather than shoot their weapons. It's quite interesting. But I have to say, I'm sorry to say that the research that came from this was also used to develop military training, which then brainwashed soldiers in further wars so that they would be in full killing mode. And for instance, by the time the Vietnam War rolled around, their training was in full effect. Sadly. He also debunks the results of some famous sociological experiments and some media stories that sort of have been held up over time as examples of how we can be so cruel when put into difficult situations. But Rutger takes a really deep dive into the detail to show what really happened and how those situations were manipulated by the runners of the experiments and how those outcomes were shaped to fit this kind of fear and mistrust narrative that was playing, needed, sort of played out better in the media and was kind of able to be used for political ends. So really, really interesting. It's a pop psychology book. It's not, you know, it's not heavy at all. So in comparison to perhaps some other books in that sort of pile. This is not a difficult read. You'll whip through it fairly quickly, even though it's about maybe 350 pages. There is a bit of a Pollyanna vibe to it, but to be honest, I kind of needed that when I was reading it.
I think we all do.
Yeah, so get on the list if you need that too.
Pollyanna, as opposed to just Polly.
That's right. Yes. That's right. I don't think they got into Polly in there. I just don't remember now. And on a similar vibe, and this one is on my to-be-read list because I've only just started it. It's a lot shorter than Humankind at only 90 pages. I've just started reading How to Stay Sane in an Age of Division by Elif Shafak. Now, some listeners may have read her novel 10 Minutes, 38 Seconds in This Strange World.
Yes.
It was shortlisted for the Booker in 2019. Now, Shafak is a prolific Turkish and British author, and she's also an activist. She champions women's rights, minority rights, and she's quite political. And she's also been described as a lifter of hearts, and I think that's something we all need right now. Now, this little book is an exploration of how our sharing of stories brings us together and how we can bring optimism a bit more consciously into our lives rather than just waiting for those opportunities to happen. She also wants us to try and mitigate the effects of all those algorithms that dictate and polarise opinions online and can cause division where there doesn't need to be. So just a ticket for these really uncertain times. And a little bonus is that it's the perfect size to just tuck in your handbag or your backpack so you've got a little lift on the go. You know, I always think it's great to have a little light book that's ready to deploy.
So do I, yes. And particularly something for these times too.
Absolutely.
So that sounds wonderful. Yeah, it's a nice looking little unit, isn't it?
Pretty little book from a series called the Welcome series. So I'll have to have a look and see if there's other little light ones. Yeah, for a booster.
Yes.
Booster for your backpack.
Just when you need it, yes. Well, look, I think I've got time to... I was telling you about something interesting that I've come across this week because I've actually been doing some research for another project that I'm working on. And so I've been reading an older book, and it's a book of correspondence that includes letters that the American writer and composer Paul Bowles wrote to his wife Jane Bowles, who was also a writer. And these letters were written in the 1940s and beyond. So the book's called In Touch, The Letters of Paul Bowles. And it was released in 1994. So it's been around for a while. But I just thought it kind of fits in because the Bowles were a bohemian couple who escaped the confines of that really straight-laced American society of the 30s and 40s. And they lived most of their lives in Tangier in North Africa, where there was lots of drugs and alcohol, and it was cheap. Living was cheap. Now, they had a lavender marriage, and they were a throuple as well with Jane's love interest, Sharifa. Mm-hmm. So mentioning the book, I guess, because it reminded me that people were questioning the traditional relationships way before 2020.
So true.
So it's not just...
We shouldn't forget that.
Yeah, I think we've got to keep that in mind. It's not just a new thing. And they even then they were asking if the white picket fence and 2.5 Labradoodles or kids were...
Take your pick.
Yeah, were achievable, affordable, desirable. I know they probably didn't have Labradoodles in 1940s, but all those concepts...
Their loss.
Yeah,
their
that's
loss,
right.
Allison.
But all those questions were around even then. So, and...
It's so true.
Yeah. So nothing changes, really, does it? Or some things change.
That's right, although they had to go to Tangier to do it.
To do it, yes, that's right. Yeah. So that's one I'd recommend having a look at that too. Really, really interesting.
Excellent. Oh, well, I think we've got enough time for Hot Tip or Two. What do you think?
Yes, definitely. There's awesome. A good one, isn't there?
Really good one. So hot tip for this week is that the 2021 Ockham Book Awards long list just came out this week. So, and we're really pleased to see that some of our favourites from last year are on there. So we were happy to see... Fake Baby by Annie McDade, Nothing to See by Pip Adam, and Spriggs by Brinavan Nganga Lingam on the list. And we would really, if you haven't already read these books, we want you to get in the queue for them. And you could also check out some of our past episodes on Auckland Library's SoundCloud account to hear our reviews and what we thought of those three books. And we will also ask you to look out for more reviews coming off that long list coming soon from Alison and I. So we are looking forward to sharing more of those with you. The long list lasts for a month. The cut comes in a month's time, so you'll see the shortlist coming out in a month's time. So get reading now, and then we'll see who's still standing after that last cut.
Yeah, and so it gives us my to-be-read list is now the long list.
Right.
the ones from this list of 40 that I haven't read already.
That's right. We always have to pay a little bit of catch-up.
Yes.
We can't get them all.
No, it's a game of catch-up, isn't it? A game of two halves, but it is a game of catch-up, this sort of work that we do. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting into that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think our last hot tip for the day is that our summer reading sorted challenges, which have been running since the 5th of January, this is your last week to get on board with those. The last day of challenges is Friday the February the 5th. So do visit our website, aucklandlibraries.govt.nz. Get registered, join one of the two challenges we have on there, one for families and one just for you, and you could be in with the chance to win Specsavers prize packs with two pairs of glasses, valued at up to $800. You could win passes to lots of Auckland attractions, and you can also win a Kobo Nia e-reader, so you can dive into our digital library, and there's heaps more prizes there too, including new books. So yes, get to our website and try out our new digital platform Beanstack, because that's where the reading challenge sits this time. It's all online. You can do it on your phone or on a website. Lots of fun and heaps of recommended reads in there. Lots to discover.
Yeah, and Beanstack's really fun to use, isn't it? I'm finding it really rewarding.
Enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a good way of having a visual record of what you've been reading.
And interesting to see as well how much you're reading in each day and how you can fit a bit more in.
Yeah, I'm finding it quite a motivator. Actually, it's sort of a bit like a Fitbit for your mind or for your readers.
It is. I think it is, yeah. And it's good. And if you're into that Fitbit sort of thing, it's got a stats bar so you can see whether you've got a streak of reading or whether you need to catch up a bit. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I like the way it sends you a reminder every couple of days. Have you been reading?
Have you been reading? Yeah.
Yes.
You can also, it doesn't matter if you miss a day of reading. If you were reading yesterday or 3 days ago, you can still log that past reading on your account and play catch up.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's really good. And it's fun, too. Isn't it?
Yeah,
I'm enjoying it. Well, look, this has been really great, and thanks for your time today, Ineke.
My pleasure.
To our listeners, thanks for tuning in. Happy reading, and take care and be kind to yourselves. Haere rā, ka kite anō.
This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and
catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/booksandbeyond. Every day, every day.